guys, I'm going to bring you into the episode here in just a moment, but I wanted to record a quick hello because yesterday's recording was really, really fun, but also like kind of all over the place. So I just wanted to say a quick hello, apologize for the lateness of this episode. Our holiday travels among the group of us meant that we are missing Alex and Megan this time around, which I briefly refer to. And we are also dealing with a very sleep deprived Sarah and Ezra. Additionally, we just wanted to say thank you so much. We had so much amazing feedback from everybody this episode in particular, and it doesn't go unnoticed. It is so much appreciated. And we responded to pretty much everything everyone brought up, but we didn't necessarily name names the whole time. So I just want to run down the names of the folks that contributed and asked us some questions, because we appreciate you and we love that you're talking with us and we want you to do that more. And it's just, it makes it so much more fun to watch the show when everybody is chiming in. So Mr. J, Brian, Christina, Lauren, Bunbury, Jen Ellen, Matt, and Jorge, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. We so appreciate it. And here's the episode. Enjoy.
What do you call an avocado situation that doesn't belong to you?
Nacho avocado situation.
All right. We are nailing it.
I think that's a great open. Let's get into it.
Let's go. So this is top. Well, no, it's not. This is back your mics.
The Top Chef. Welcome to Top Chef.
Welcome to Top Chef, you guys. This is the way low quality Top Chef you've come to know and love.
It's a little different than you remember.
It's not what you thought it was, and I am not Padma Lakshmi. So it's going great. Yeah, we are the Top Chef podcast. From the makers of Read It and Weep. And this week we are down a couple of folks. There are some people that cut off their fingers and had to go see a medic about it. Their gloves filled with blood and they couldn't be here anymore.
Honestly, they were kind of whining about it too, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was definitely not their fault, but nonetheless.
But they didn't handle it well.
Yeah, nonetheless, our Portland contingent is not here. Oh, wow. And I just realized I've pulled a real Philip in that I'm not prepared with a question this time around.
Are you going to do this whole introduction from under a table?
From under a table. I'm going to give you a cocktail and then proceed to ruin your whole evening. That's my big plan.
Well, I can ask you guys a question.
Yeah, oh, do
great.
It. Do it. Ezra.
It's not food based.
Sarah,
is that okay?
Caleb, yeah, Bay Area. Ask us a question.
Okay. So right now, Caleb is eating a quesadilla and playing with the airplane toy that's making airplane sounds randomly. Mm. So, in your life, what sound effects would you like to follow you at inopportune moments?
Ooh. Inopportune or just randomly?
Well, I guess all those, including inopportune moments.
Mm. Mm. I would like a raven's cry. Just at any point, there could just be a... And you just know, there goes Chris, the raven.
Yeah, it's like, Tanya, happy Valentine's Day.
He'd get partway into happy. Happy.
I don't understand this at all. Also, did you just give yourself a new nickname?
No, I don't know.
The Raven?
I guess.
The Raven. Oh, there goes the Raven.
Like, yeah.
I like an uncertain flute. It's like,
Oh, just like.
Just from time to time. No, I think it's just one note.
Oh. How about the, like, good morning, like, chime sound? Like, do, 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 do.
Shut up, it's 3 p.m.
So,
Jen, that'd be really awkward when you're going to, like, to somber situations, but it's like, you just, like, you walk into, like, a funeral home, and you're just like, do, 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 do.
It's like a beautiful morning. It'll remind me how glorious life is.
Yeah, oh, that's good.
So beautiful.
Ez, how about you, man?
I mean, I'll take the situation that's happening right now, which is Sesame Street, you know, like quesadillas being chewed and airplanes going overhead.
Mm. Okay. Oh, you want both. It's pretty,
points for
I'm
creativity.
Living the dream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're living your best life. As we all are. We've just finished lunch service, and now it's time for dinner. And things are going to go a lot of different ways, I have to say. So I guess here's a question. How did we feel like this squared with what we anticipated? Were there any big surprises going into the dinner and how like it like people got short on time? That seemed to affect
Chris,
people negatively.
Chris, pick Chris. I have ideas.
Yes,
Chris,
you with
Chris
the Raven.
Ideas. Yeah, the Raven.
The Raven spoke. Spoke the Raven.
No, I felt like Top Chef listened to our last episode and they listened to what we wanted and they just gave us a gift. They just said, oh, you know, because we said, oh, it's neck and neck. Anything could happen at lunch. You know, we're really looking for a clear distinction. We're looking to understand a reason why being slow at lunch is hurting one team.
Yeah.
We're looking for Philip to crash and burn and do something awful. And we're looking for glory for the people that we like. And that all happened this Restaurant Wars.
I was surprised how unsurprising it was.
Yeah, it kind of went
just
straight
all
ahead.
Went. Yeah, it all went to according to.
Yeah. It all went to,
To your heart's plan.
I wasn't surprised how much I loved Gail and Padma and Tom's grumpy faces at Palette.
They were not having any of that.
Oh, you mean at District LA?
Or District LA, I'm sorry. District LA. Yeah. You're right.
And it is quoth the Raven, I realized after I said spoke the Raven. I was like, that sounded wrong.
Yeah. But just starting with
regarding quote the Raven.
Yeah. Inri Raven.
Inri that no thing matter. I said earlier. I don't want to embarrass the Edgar Allan Poe fans.
But
in the
were
audience.
You guys also just like really confused as to like the rules of the lunch service and like what being behind would do? And like once you saw that that meant that they would have less time to prep for dinner, did you kick up your heels just a little bit or?
Yeah, well, because I thought I remembered them saying, like, they kept serving even after the bell rang or whatever it was signifying the end of service. So I thought, okay, those people are getting their food. But, yeah, I didn't put it together.
I didn't at all.
What it meant until the next one.
I thought those people were not going to get their food.
But they kept cooking.
Yeah, no, well, I thought they were being really heroic about it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I thought they were like, just oh, they're really nice.
Yeah, they were like, listen, if those people don't get their food, it's not because their food wasn't cooked and sitting back here.
Yeah, that's pretty rough.
I like the punishment thing where it's just like, well, you didn't get the food out in time, so you're gonna have to eat all those meals.
Yeah.
Smoke all these cigarettes,
that many avocado salads with crispy egg.
Yeah, I guess our clue in retrospect should have been that Team Palette was breaking down and starting getting ready for dinner service because that was a signal that like it was one contiguous piece of time. Like they didn't have any break. There was no like go have a beer in the Saran wrap closet and then come back and do dinner. It was just
really
like
hot in there.
Yeah, every bit of time that you get saved from lunch becomes prep for dinner.
Have you guys, you can be honest here, have you ever like wanted a Saran wrap closet where you could have a beer?
Yeah.
Oh, almost nearly every day where I could just go in and like there'd be a bunch of sponsored products that I could like destroy or not.
Or like build things out of.
Yeah. And, like, and just go have a beer and stew for a little while.
And just stare at a lot of monster shelving.
I'd have a rule in mind.
Oh,
you guys can come or not, but no clothes.
What?
Only wear what you find.
Sarah's face while you're describing this is priceless. By the way,
no clothes. See, I was like, only like tie-back like, jumpsuits, or like, what are we doing here? No, make your own.
Whatever. So Ziploc baggies and Gladwear all the way down.
Okay, now I'm making Sarah's face. I don't like this.
Yeah, I like to think they
get
creative.
You don't have to come
in there.
You
use Reynolds wrap for the opaque surfaces, and you use. Cling film to keep it sexy and
no.
I would have some parchment paper for myself because I never tried it. I'm always curious what it would do.
Somehow I'm picturing you in like a parchment, like a parchment paper toga,
but like only the most rudimentary. It's like you just sort of made a tube that's like cylindrical, and you just have it. You're holding it with your hands. You haven't fastened it to anything. It's just
I like this, right? So I'm sort of like stood up against the wall because I can't like bend my knees and just like sipping a beer.
You've got like your beer, and you're like firmly stuck in the rules of your own design.
I'm like, hey guys, how's it hanging? Yeah, welcome to the party.
Nothing is hanging because I used the Saran wrap.
Yeah, how's it hanging? Wrapped tightly to my body, sweating.
All right, so we've gone a little off the rails.
yeah, bring us back there.
Sure. Chief can play. So we really had a very clear split between palette, which primarily kept their shit together with a couple of fumbles, and District LA that just like went entirely.
There's nothing but fumbles with a couple of competent dishes.
There was almost entirely fumbles, and lunch was like a distant memory.
Yeah.
They didn't discuss lunch at all. It just didn't matter.
It was only when it was like, well, I guess Kwame's safe because his lunch is all right.
And Jeremy.
We did,
and it put that new guy on the chopping block. Apparently,
yeah, Amar.
New guy, Amar.
Yeah,
Amar's second episode did not go great.
Yeah, he made apparently vinegar pork.
Vinegar pork. That was new.
Well, haven't you ever said, I wish the ceviche had more pork in it?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I just want to cure my cooked pork belly with vinegar.
Amar, you got a great pickle juice. Why not put some pork in it?
This is worse than pickle juice.
Yeah.
that was priceless. The treatment of the restaurants, the order in which they were visited, helped to put everything into sharper relief.
Ooh,
right?
Conspiracy. Do you think maybe the judges were a little bit exhausted and or drunk by the first one?
Especially because of the wine overfill at District LA that they commented upon.
Yeah.
And which Gail was like, your glass is getting refilled and we have not had any wine. None of us have drunk any of our wine.
No, I'm saying like at Palate, do you think that they were tired from judging Palate and that may have hurt them? Is it better to go first or second in Restaurant Wars?
Oh, I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think they stay on top of it because I think we'd be able to tell unless they're just they really edit it well. But because we've seen Padma a little bit sloppy before,
I do like her a little bit.
I do like that. And like when I say Padma being sloppy, like I don't mean sloppy. It's it's on the
her
Padma
sloppy
scale.
Is better than any of our anything.
We should be so lucky. Yeah,
we should be so lucky as to be sloppy, Padma.
But I do think Tom was maybe slightly less inhibited at the second meal because he was going off on Philip, which made me very happy. But when he was teasing he was kind of making fun of him, like, oh, I bet he's over there talking about his restaurants. And he totally was the entire time.
Yeah. And his tattoos and explaining his chest tattoos.
I wish I could have enjoyed like the meanness, but it felt so easy, you know? There's a certain point where it's like, you know, you're like, this is just who he is, and you're making fun of something he's obviously never going to change.
Yeah.
That is a good point.
I agree.
That is a good point.
That was a very consistent through line for this, is that Philip believes that he executed his food well and that he realized his food as good as it possibly could. Mm. It's just that these chefs were on a different planet than him.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. He definitely got more strong and weird-willed toward the end.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it. He has to believe in himself when the chips are down. I mean, like, you know, if he's not going to be super overconfident, nobody else is in him. You know, he's not exactly like winning over the judges.
Is it really? Do we think it's as simple as a lack of being in mentorship? Or being mentored, like it's a lack of mentors in his like upbringing as a chef. Is it as simple as that?
I mean, I think that there's this story you could tell about Philip, is that he's doing his food and that it doesn't conform to the norms of what these judges are expecting, you know, and that he wasn't mentored in these particular restaurants like these other chefs. But it just doesn't hold up because you have other chefs doing stuff that's good and Philip's doing stuff that everybody agrees is not good.
Yeah.
I guess not everyone needs a sensei, but a sensei who will kick your ass will probably solve some problems, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like having the dynamic where you're able to get feedback and you're able to take it as not like, you know, knives to your soul, but also not like something that you can disagree with completely and completely ignore. Like that is a skill that you have to build early in your career. And if you've already opened 2 restaurants, you've probably built up enough confidence internally that a lot of that stuff is not going to be able to penetrate. And it's going to be too difficult to try and take on board that other people don't like your thing because it's not good. Not just because they don't love strawberry sauce surrounded by strawberries topped with some onion. Like that's just not a good thing to eat.
And we've seen like Marjorie or who was it? Was it Marjorie or Mar? Somebody said like, oh yeah, no, I used to be Philip. Like, yeah. I did this. And it's not as though there's no hope for Philip, and it's not as though he's not talented. He clearly is. But to be really, really successful at Top Chef.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's hard.
Totally. Totally.
Yeah. It just kind of sucks to already. Well, I mean, I feel like I think I've been Philip, and I think anyone who cringes when they see Philip do stuff has must have been Philip at some point as well.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you want to already have been good, basically, but like no one, like, it sucks to have to know that you're not there yet. And so it's much easier to like to push that aside and like, it's like, no, man, you know, taste is subjective, you know, like, you know, pants are subjective. Like, you guys don't know what you're talking about. Like, everyone should come down, hang out at my parchment paper party.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The reviews have not been great, for the record, on my parchment paper party.
I'm glad that you're feeling strong and parchmenty.
I'm going to double down on this.
You really have. You really have this. And we're proud of you, maybe. Yeah.
That's all I'm hearing, not. Yes. I'm hearing lots of approval from everywhere.
Yeah, supportive, but it doesn't mean I have to understand it, buddy.
I'm curious to hear what people thought in terms of how this falls into line or does not fall into line with previous restaurant wars. Like, where does this fall on the spectrum of restaurant wars overall? Did we like this the best? Did we think this was the worst possible idea? I mean, I obviously there's a more nuanced answer to this, but I'm curious what the thoughts are.
I kind of felt like this was like the Chris, you played tennis, right?
Yeah, bunch. Yeah,
I feel like this is sort of like maybe like tennis employs some things to make sure that's like fair, basically, right? That like you know you trade serves and that kind of stuff, and it takes longer, but it's not just
so
you know,
if
it's not
on
just
one side
like
of
one,
the court, you're switching every two games anyway, so it's not going to be a huge factor. Yeah,
yeah. So I felt like this is kind of that, where it's just it took longer and maybe it wasn't quite as interesting, but it was definitely the fair result.
I found myself old-timey, like enjoying the second half of Restaurant Wars the way that I would enjoy any good episode of Top Chef. Mm-hmm. Whereas the first episode of Restaurant Wars was just incredibly stressful.
Well,
and I was sort of panicking
like
the whole time.
They had so much work ahead of them. Lunch was kind of this afterthought that they were all just grinding out, and there were a couple good dishes, but there wasn't anything like super elevated or good, and there wasn't a lot of drama. It was just it was just lunch, you know?
Yeah.
And so like by the time it was dinner, that's where the rubber hit the road and you got to see, you know, kind of the result of a lot of the work and the grinding that happened last week. You know, like Jeremy working on his risotto, is it going to work out? No. But Marjorie's working on her bread, and that totally worked out. Everybody loved the bread.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you just got to see, I mean, so much more about the result, and this is, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to argue with the results of who won and who went home, and you saw this clear drama happening, but it took two episodes to get there.
I guess, because the first episode is also front-loaded with the prep for dinner, we're seeing more just, like, action second episode, and you get more time to think about front of house.
Yeah.
Which, I guess, in Restaurant Wars, that feels like that is the time to consider that as a part of restaurant success, and so... Yeah. I felt like I got more of like my like Restaurant Wars feeling this episode as opposed to last episode where I was mostly just like in a stress cave.
Yeah. Sarah, what did you think about how part one compared to part two in terms of watchability and also how this Restaurant Wars compares to other Restaurant Wars, you know, total?
I think I liked the fact that they all had a chance to be either front of the house or executive chef. And
I agree.
So even though, I liked that, you know, it was less nerve wracking in that way since you knew everyone was going to be kind of on the hot seat. But I do think it made that first episode less exciting and more stressful. It was more just like, this is horrible and they're really stressed and why are you doing this to them? And then maybe that paid off a little bit in the second part, just because, like you were saying, it was neat to watch them cook this episode, and it felt more like Restaurant Wars.
Yes.
And I felt like, okay, they all got a chance at being one of the two hot seat roles, and it seems more fair that way. So, yeah, I still don't know if it's really fair to them to make them go through all of that. But as a viewer, I think it made at least part two more fun to watch than a regular Restaurant Wars.
Yeah.
I would support this happening again if you can maybe cut it down to like 90 minutes and have it just happen on one night.
If they can figure out how to do it I mean, could they do that with one service somehow? No, you can't really do that. You have to have two services.
Halfway through, everyone switched places.
And that amazing. Would be worse.
Yeah.
This is one meal, but it should comprise breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Oh, best that's such of a luck. Cool challenge. Maybe not for Restaurant Wars.
Mm. That'd be a good quick fire, like yeah. the quick fire of the worst quick fire of all time.
Well, they had that quick fire in Las Vegas with the egg and the flat top, where they just had to cook all the different eggs and keep track of all those orders, and that's an insane job of.
Yeah, but that feels almost too singular a skill. I think we're talking about three meals, one plate. Oh. No.
All on a plate with like little dividers in it. Yeah.
Three meals, one plate. You're only wearing parchment paper. Get it.
Yes. I wasn't paying attention to the first part, but now I'm in again.
As is back, everyone.
This episode brought to you by parchment paper.
Yeah. Indeed.
So, I mean, we saw a lot of failure, including, like, I think Jeremy's error about, you know, the service running long really put Orange behind the whole time. But I don't know. We saw a lot of errors, but I feel like the food on the other side, on Team Gray, on Team Palette, was pretty good overall, right? We didn't see a lot of huge errors. Marjorie's dessert maybe being one of them. Mm-hmm. But
the trout they didn't love.
Oh yeah, yeah. I guess don't stuff a trout with rice, guys.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, that I mean, and I think there was a lot of people were kind of admitting at the prep stage that like, wow, I really took on more than I could actually execute.
We had three different people on Palette say that. Carl, Marjorie, and Karen all individually said that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there was a lot. I think that's where some of the more significant missteps came, in the form of like, wow, I really got ambitious around this dinner service, and that wasn't the thing to do.
Yeah,
this stuffing the trout thing, the proverbial stuffing of the trout,
sure,
our annual trout stuffing,
and the literal stuffing
yes,
of the trout,
both the gastronomically. But I feel like stuffing is like a stuffing things with things is like a another. Like hasn't gone well for people on the whole. Is
yeah.
This, can you guys reach back into your memory banks?
It's not stuffed chef.
Yeah.
Oh. I think. Yeah. I mean, between that and cutting up raw fish and serving it, I think those things could maybe take a chill for a little bit.
Yes. Yeah, stuffing can... things with things and wrapping things with things also.
Well, mm-hmm. I mean, and
I don't
from
think
a...
we've seen too many wrapping things with things. And we're like, oh man, that so fish wrapped sweetbread, boy.
Mm. I will say, I mean, it seems like with the little bit of culinary knowledge that I will be willing to claim, whenever you do something like that, your temperature situation and your doneness situation are going to be difficult. And rice is already something that is difficult to cook well. So if you stuff it inside a fish that's really like flaky and delicate, you are playing with fire. And it's not surprising that it didn't go great.
I feel like rice is kind of like the little league like goalie, I guess, like where it's just like they can't like really win the game, they can only ruin the game for you.
You should never
send rice out, basically, because like if you made rice well, it's like, oh great, you made rice, which everyone should be able to do. If not, it's be like you messed up rice.
And we've had some rice because it was Isaac's dirty rice was really good earlier this season.
Oh,
and
true.
We've had some rice salad. Actually, one time there was a rice salad a few seasons ago that really went over well. But for the most part, rice and risotto only is bad.
Yeah, rice can only hurt you.
Because time management, unless you're super focused on it, it's either going to be too starchy or it's going to be not done enough or just like...
Or it's going to burn.
Yeah, and it's something that's easy to forget about. It's easy to forget about that back pot on the stove. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Ez.
Oh, shit, my back pot on the stove. Guys, I got to go.
Exactly.
We never saw them again.
Who do we feel came out... I mean, we can talk forever about our bottom player... and his exit from the show at large. But I think it is interesting to talk about the big successes. And I also wanted to touch briefly on Karen and her kind of... I feel like there was a nice moment where she like went to Isaac and was like, you're doing a great job, like really nice work. And I felt like for anybody
she's
who...
really emerged as a leader and also just a really strong character. I feel like... The first half of the season, she was like a competent chef.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, she became just like in control, killing it.
Yeah.
She, her mental game is super strong. Like, she doesn't get phased as much, even though she says she's stressed out. And clearly, you know, there are a lot of emotions going on when they were waiting to see the result of which restaurant won, like her big reaction.
Yeah. You know, which was so great. Adorable and
but
wonderful.
She, her cooking doesn't suffer because of her emotions, which is something that is so huge at this stage of the game.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it takes a lot of fortitude. And I guess it was just more than anything, even more than their win, I just really enjoyed seeing how Team Palette was able to come together and they were able to fill in for each other where they needed to. And just like they kept it positive. I feel like the fact that they were able to nail lunch and they felt good about the way that lunch went put them in such a good place that even when dinner was really hard, they were able to just like keep it going and keep the spirits high. Yeah. And then of course, I mean, I love humility, so I was really charmed that they all seemed so worried and like they maybe didn't nail it.
Well, that was nice. I've got a question for you guys. Yeah. Say you are newcomer Amar and you're picking your team.
Sure.
If you pick Cajun Man instead of Philip, does your team win? And like, who do you think goes home then? As a result,
no. I don't think so. I mean, Philip, his front of house was terrible, but I think that the leadership that you know, some of the other people like Karen would have shown, they would have said like, "Hey, you need to fix this," or something like that. Amar was just so laissez-faire about what his chefs were doing. I mean, because you don't win when you let Jeremy make the worst risotto ever. You know, like that was just something that everybody let Jeremy do when normally Jeremy's great for, you know, he's good for a fantastic fish dish and maybe something else, maybe, you know.
Yeah. And putting bowls inside other bowls.
Yeah, sure.
He loves that.
Yeah. He loves that shit.
We'll do that all day long.
Yeah. But and like a ceviche.
Amar didn't seem to understand the role really well. Like he literally said, as executive chef, I'm not going to tell people how to do their dish or something, you know.
Yeah, right. He totally said that. Yeah,
like you're misunderstanding both the word executive and the word chef.
Yeah. I thought it was a bystander role. A bystander, I'm not gonna tell people what to do.
I don't want to mess with people and their food and like how they do what they do. That's not really my place.
That's super hard. I think if Philip hadn't been so bad and been allowed to be so bad, Amar would have gone instantly home too.
Wait, but can we talk? I mean, we have to talk about that salad dressing. It looked like congealed blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looked like the inside of Philip's glove.
Would appeal to a
certain
crowd.
Yeah.
The parchment paper loving crunch.
Yeah.
We're an eclectic bunch.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, the salad dressing was really foreshadowing for that glove situation.
Yeah, but it was like gelatinous. It was too thick. It was too sweet.
It looked very much like, oh, dear. I feel like.
It looked like a coulis.
Yeah, and I think Tom was the one who said like, "Oh, bring me some ice cream," because it really was a really thick sauce that looked like it would have been delightful over ice cream.
Also, apparently, it wasn't strawberry season at that point, which we didn't know until Tom said that. So it was just like this thing where Philip decided this works in my restaurant. I'm just gonna do it.
Yeah,
which
is
that's been the kiss of death lately. Of just like, I've made this dish before and it's great.
Yeah, was it his birthday? Did he miss his kids?
What else was going on? I think, that there were a lot of things wrong with that dish, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Quick second, guys.
Sure.
You have 15 seconds. You're the executive chef now instead of newcomer Amar. And how do you fix that dish before it goes out?
I don't even remember what else was on it. Just lettuce?
acid and heat are going to undercut sweetness a bit. So you need to spice it up. You need to get some acid in there. But also make something goddamn else, Philip.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, really, because Philip did try to blame any fixes that should have been made to his dish on the people that were plating it for him.
Yeah.
And Tom ultimately was like, you know, there's nothing that would have fixed that dish other than it just not being that dish. Like, it was bad from the beginning. There was no like, oh no, if only you'd added a squeeze of lemon. Like, there was number of lemons that was going to save.
He'd separated the olive oil and the lemon.
You know, yeah, right. That's what we're going to make a strong move, guys.
Philip at judge's table was like, oh, there were two tiny little shaved bits of onion that were supposed to be there. I'm not sure. Maybe yours didn't have those two tiny shaved bits of onion.
Or maybe the onion wasn't tiny. It was too big. Sorry, Ez, what were you going to say?
Well, I'm going to make lemon out of this situation as a lemon lover.
Fuck
lime. Boo limes.
Sorry,
I'm going to take Jeremy's tasteless risotto, put the strawberry sauce on top. I'm going to have a delicious porridge.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. Dessert porridge. Sure.
Yeah, dessert porridge. It's going to be great, guys, because he didn't use broth, so it's like it's basically it's like it's a breakfast meal.
Oh, as yikes. Your Frankenstein meal from the worst, the worst dishes. What
Caleb tries to make me sometimes, which is like soup with cheese, and actually that's pretty good.
Yeah, cheesy soup.
Like milk with jam in it. What?
Yeah, yeah, coffee. That's what he likes. This is coffee with beans and cheese.
Yum. Caleb, you're going to have your own billboard someday.
What he needs is a mentor. He needs a mentor who can really get him. No.
It's but cool. maybe not Parchment Dad. Yeah. Who knows? Oh, no.
Should we get maybe to the mailbag? And,
yeah, let's get.
Because we had a ton of great feedback.
Let's pop open our.
Say Philip went home, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Philip went home. Swamp People won.
Yeah, yay. Isaac won. Okay, wait, but Cajun Man won, and that was such a delight.
That was a wonderful moment where he just screamed.
Yeah.
Just screamed.
The guttural.
He did it. He did it, America. Yeah, that was so delightful. Oh,
I
man.
I feel like
that
we should.
Good.
We must increase his number of Cajun Madness for that, right?
Cajun Man 6,000?
Yeah.
7,000? Well, if he wins Top Chef, he will be Cajun Man 10,000. How about that?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Fans hoped for as much.
Okay.
Indeed. Okay.
I like 6,000 for now.
6,000? Cajun Man 6,000. I think that's good. Because you never know. Like, sometimes people get all haughty upon winning. Yeah. So.
He could reverse Drake this, and I'd have to bump him down to 3,000 so fast and he could beard spin.
He should know that's on the table. He best watch out for you.
All right. Well, now I think it's time to open up our bulging
mailbag.
And I just realized that could have gone a very weird direction. Oh. But that was a really solid mailbag, guys.
Yeah. Parchment paper.
Yeah. Our bulging parchment paper. Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah. So where should we start? We got some really great feedback from our fans.
Let's start over on Facebook.
Sure.
Facebook.com/packyourmix.
Yeah, sure. So Claire wrote in and said that not since season 3's infamous Restaurant Wars do-over has there been so much fail on the plate at a Restaurant Wars. Mm. I can't help but question why they feel the need to change a good thing. Two services was twice as many chances to drop the ball. Like the knife block, something should be left alone, she says.
Oh, so
invoking the knife block to wrap yourself around.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a good rhetorical tactic. You know, I'm on board when you start talking about knife block.
I guess that's a sound condemnation of the two service restaurant war. Do we agree or disagree? Or I guess if you have your druthers, would you bring it back? Next season?
Which?
Because there's going to be a next season, guys. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
They got season 14. Yeah. Woo! It's been renewed.
I like it. I like the double. I don't know. It makes more of an event out of the biggest challenge of the year.
All right. But, so Chris says, let's make it a double. Yeah. Sarah?
I'm on the fence. I think I'm open to a double, but done more efficiently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd say without some changes, it's decidedly more lime than lemon to me.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Interesting.
Tanya, what do you think?
I would be open to seeing it again, but I think what I have to believe is that they got so much information out of doing this first one that next time would be really different.
Yeah.
Like I think it would have to be totally an adjustment from what they did this time.
Totally. Yeah. We had some other great feedback from Danielle. Thanks for writing in, Danielle. One of the things she said is the national nightmare is over. The editors really had no chill with the Philip editing today, and he was definitely it was pretty obvious. But she thought Restaurant Wars was pretty underwhelming, that nothing really seemed to blow the judges' minds food-wise, and the dishes were like solid at best, which I think is a good point. She does commend.
That is a really good point.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't culinarily brilliant.
Yeah. And I think part of that is just they had so much to do, and maybe that's more about the lime of the challenge, you know, that maybe they stick with a one-service challenge. But she said, yay for Isaac coming through with the win. She was supporting him and thought he was a really stable force. And she thinks that Carl, with the milkshake, the tureen, and the upcoming rapping at MC Hammer, is probably next to go.
Oh, no.
Handsome Carl.
Carl's showing signs of weakness.
Yeah.
Although I thought his consommé seemed like it went over like gangbusters.
Yeah, and the crudo, even though it was a
bleeping crudo.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was kind of an editing thing. They made us think that someone was getting sent home for another crudo, but that was like one of their almost.
Yeah, it was one of the better.
Yeah,
dishes
they really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Cheryl wrote in and said that she prefers when there's a clear winner and loser while Restaurant Wars is happening. But Gail, she wanted to point out, was a super delight. Her like, oh, hello, when the food came in over her shoulder and just like the general sass of Gail was wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I didn't like when they were kind of rude to that old guy server who kept trying to clear their plates, because that's not – I mean, they were trying to blame that on District LA.
Yeah.
But – I think it was just that old guy not knowing.
Although if there was proper GM supervision, that probably wouldn't have been persisting.
I guess that's the point. But it's not like they're training those servers how to be servers.
Yeah.
Well, I was curious to know like what the, because they made a lot of commentary after the fact that was sort of like, if you had let the servers know to act a certain way and like that there was this overall like degree of subtlety that should like inform everything you do. Which made it feel like they were going to get a full crazy lesson in service. And we just never, I mean, it seemed like Karen basically gave Marjorie like a 5-minute chunk of time where she ran out there and was like, get some silverware on the tables, folks. We're going to dinner. And like,
and
I didn't get the impression.
And fold the tablecloths like this.
Yeah. It just didn't, it didn't seem to me like, I'm curious what the amount of time is that you're supposed to have with your wait staff before Restaurant Wars opens.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't clear to me.
Although, you know, because District LA was so far behind, that's probably one thing they didn't spend as much time on. You know, that very well could be.
Yeah. I mean, but we did. But we got a lot of Philip talking to the wait staff about how proud they should be and how he's opened these two restaurants and like his whole deal. So I got the impression that there definitely is a chunk of time available for that stuff. It just, it depends on what you say and how you use it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And, you know, I know Ez stepped away just to go be a dad, but, you know, we had a lot of people write in about Ezra loving Philip and Philip's general nature and just remarking on him as a character on Top Chef. You know, Eunice said that Padma goes completely, I just completely lost my place. I apologize. But
Emily
wrote that. Sorry. Although I've never been part of Ezra's We Heart Philip fan club, she's glad he stuck around this long. And she feels like the delusional mind of Philip could not be fully realized until Restaurant Wars, when he was left to unleash the crazy cocktail under the host stand and and the strawberry soup salad dessert thing. You know, did he really watch previous seasons and think what they really should have done was a strawberry salad? And I don't know. He may have. But Jane also wrote in saying that Philip wins the top serving stuff from under a table in my heart.
I was about to say, I realized that cocktail is really plating under a blanket part two.
Yeah.
He just loves to produce things from under other things. Yeah.
Jane likes to surprise you.
Yeah.
You pop up.
Totally.
So. We do have, and actually we have a few people sort of piping up on behalf of Philip and saying like, you know.
They're going to miss him. He was offbeat. He was a good character on the show.
Yeah, that was Jocelyn's comment.
And both Jane and Jay compared Philip to Marcel and suffering from Marcel syndrome, where it's the edits and just personality flaws that are making him perhaps seem worse than he really is.
Or that he has the potential to be really bold and visionary the more practice he gets and the more time he has in the kitchen. Yeah.
Well, and Jay said
it was really us reacting to his, you know,
demeanor,
personality, and the ego part. You know, if that's what you see, just someone talking themselves up with nothing to back it up, especially, or at least not a lot to back it up.
Yeah.
You're not gonna like him.
Yeah,
it is harder to like them.
But also, like, inability to take criticism was something Jay pointed
out. Right, and that's part of it.
Yeah. And I feel like roping some Twitter commentary into this is probably wise here. Chris Tokohama at Trojan Topher also pointed out that he feels like Philip gets the douche edit, which is a separate issue from him being an actual douche. And I think that's probably fair.
Yeah.
You know, it's worth considering that, that he's being treated a certain way in what we see of him. And, that might not be entirely on his side. And that's okay.
For sure.
Yeah.
To acknowledge. Although, he's just not a person that I can see myself getting along with in real life, but that's not to say that he's a bad person.
Yeah. But we've seen people with personalities that we didn't like as much on TV do quite well at Top Chef. I mean, think about Nicholas a few seasons back as somebody that, you know, we didn't care for as much personally, but he was successful and his food was like competent and consistent enough that they, you know, he wound up winning.
Yeah.
We didn't feel nearly as bad about it.
Yeah.
Now that you say that, I do remember the parts of Nicholas that I didn't appreciate as much. But thinking about him just generally, I think of him as a good chef. And I don't know if that'll happen with Philip.
Yeah.
Yeah. Indeed. Indeed. So I guess now are we transitioning over?
One last thing from Facebook was Eunice wrote in and remarked that Padma went far more conservative at dinner with what she was wearing. And
yes, her lunch outfit.
The lunch outfit. Oh man,
it was a feast for the eyes.
Yeah,
yes.
But I really liked her little blazer for dinner.
I liked her really pointy earrings.
Very nice.
Yes. Mm,
true. True.
Yeah.
I wonder how much input she has in her wardrobe. I guess that's true about most reality TV, where the hostesses are bombshells, but. Do you think she has any choice?
I think she absolutely does. I follow her on Instagram, and she was remarking after last week's episode, she showed a picture of herself just kind of basically chest up in that dress, and her daughter was on set when she was getting ready and kind of remarked that it was a bit much, and she's like, I don't care. I'm wearing it.
Awesome.
So I think Padma really does. She does have some input and decision
making.
I
love it.
Yeah,
that is so fun.
Yeah.
Let's pop over to email because we actually got a couple of email.
And remember, even if you're not a Facebooker or a Tweeter, you can get us at podcasts@read-weep.com. That's the email address for all of our podcasts. And feel free to hit us up. We love it.
We do. We do. So from Jenna via email, we got the following commentary. She said she thinks this is the most nervous she's ever been during Restaurant Wars.
Yeah.
And it was really hard not to try and jump ahead to find out who got kicked off. And she thought Marjorie's dessert was and Karen's fish was not good and was basically freaking out.
Yeah, they made a lot out of those editing-wise over those two dishes being less solid.
Yeah, and I think, and for all of us, before we went over to District LA, it was really hard to tell if those failures were going to be sort of like clinching, like, all right, this is it, you're out, or if that was going to be, you know.
Yeah, guys, what if District LA was like super solid and executed perfectly?
And then she had a list of best parts that I will go through quickly here. All of Tom's faces, every single one.
Oh, there were some
which
faces.
I really enjoyed. And then she's referring to District LA as bra team, which I really like.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Bra team's host ducking under the table or ducking under the stand and pulling out cocktails equals this week serving under a blanket.
Hey-o.
So, yep. Really, courtesy of Philip again. And then when Amar said that Orange Team was going to be the one to win in the post-service beer room, she actually laughed out loud, which I did too. I couldn't help it, especially since Amar is so new.
Well, the edit telegraphed it so well, but he's new here.
Yeah, yeah. And then also, and I think this was certainly true for me as well, Isaac's scream made her slightly unreasonably happy. And he totally deserved that. After he wasn't getting his way in the beginning of the challenge, he didn't sabotage, he stepped up, he was a lemon.
Yeah, this week's lemon was definitely Isaac.
And then also, of course, that Philip is out of our hair was lovely.
Yeah.
And we also had an email from Kathleen who piped up. Just combining those now, just like a terrible strawberry salad.
Chiped.
Yeah, she's chiping in. and she says she knew when Philip conceived his strawberry dish that he was going home.
Hmm.
Thank God the only thing worse than Karen's trout dish was everything District made. Yay!
Yeah.
Yay.
And she echoed some stuff about the serving under a blanket and no more Philip. And I think it's something that everybody, you know, who has been on the side of reasonable people and not liking Philip so much.
I think,
happy.
And at the same time, I would agree that it was actually really interesting to get to see him come this far and to get to see him kind of make some guesses about what was going to be successful on Top Chef and still, you know, follow his vision and go home for something that was true to what he wanted to be doing, but also had, you know, had flaws that were really objectively flaws.
Yeah.
I sort of appreciated that it was such a cut and dry issue.
Totally.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Yeah.
Sure.
And apologies if we're retreading, but is there like a one sentence backstory you give to Philip that would make him a hero?
Oh.
What's the revisionist like thing where it's like, if you guys only knew, here's what was actually going on this whole time.
Philip, say like social justice warrior.
Philip used to be an orca whale and then was suddenly put into the body of a person and was expected to enter this intense cooking competition and was just like doing his best.
I really feel a lot of empathy for orca whale doing this. Yeah, man.
Yeah, that's like that's hardcore.
I like Chris's suggestion. I'm gonna go. Well, I'm gonna
so
back
just,
that
just,
one.
Just generally, he was doing it all for social justice.
No, that he is a social justice warrior. That's what you meant, right, Chris?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
he
yeah.
Does a lot of work for the social cause
that like
or causes.
Because what I think that does is it makes him somebody who isn't as into himself as he clearly seems to be. And he's doing it for something else and for a bigger and respectable cause. But it's not actually happening.
Ooh, what sorry, if what Philip. If every time okay.
He's making the streets of LA more beautiful with his face plastered all over.
No, I'm gonna give him a really generous
mission.
Reading though.
Okay.
I think that we didn't know this, but every time he self promoted, a shadowy government they actually it weakened the shadowy government's hold on the people. All right, so like he was through self promotion, he was fighting against the shadowy government that we don't know about.
Yeah, every time he promoted the restaurant Scratch in L.A., they freed 5,000 serfs from bondage.
Yes, you feel pretty good about him now. And anytime someone criticizes food, they enslaved another 5,000.
Oh
wow,
no.
This is really high stakes.
Yeah,
top
yeah.
Chef.
Changes,
in a way that, like,
guys.
I don't feel like these things should be related.
Why is this shadowy government playing fantasy Top Chef with their serfs?
You know what?
It's North
That's
Korea.
Not great.
There were some mission
That's
creep.
Not great.
But just to put a cap on it, thank you so much to everybody who wrote in. The feedback this week was really, really great hearing from all of you and your thoughts on that. So keep hitting us up on Twitter and Facebook and email or any other way you can.
Indeed. Indeed. I guess I feel like we had more people chiming in on Twitter. We had a bountiful mailbag this time. I think we've hit a lot of what everybody was talking about.
Yeah.
And
Last Chance Kitchen?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, Last Chance Kitchen. Oh, except we have a very special entry in our
mailbag.
And so last but not least, let's go to Alex and Megan. Please tell Ezra we are so sorry for his loss.
Yeah.
As
yeah,
you've been
sorry,
told.
Yes.
And here's how bad salad soup must have been that the guy who made water risotto didn't go home. Excellent point.
Or vinegar pork.
And he wishes he'd thought of this earlier, but his nickname for Philip from now on is Only Child because nobody ever told that guy no before. Hmm. Fair enough. Cucumber foam is the dumbest thing he's ever heard of. Cucumber, also known as water tube, doesn't taste like anything, which is not true, Alex. But he says, if you put it in water, it tastes like your water has a weird other water in it. How could you possibly think cuke foam would be any good? How could you think any foam would be any good? How are you still making foam? Padma said it tastes like spittle, which is exactly what everybody says to every foam.
Wait a second. How much spit?
There are so many of these, by the way, you guys.
Alex,
I just want you to know. I've just
really...
started scrolling, and it really does continue.
Oh, boy.
Okay, we're powering through. I definitely feel like our theory of the sassy elves is continuing. The edit, which I think it was Last Chance Kitchen, of Only Child saying, nobody told me it sucked, and then immediately cutting to beautiful alien Gale saying that it sucks, was,
oh, that was a good
pretty
one.
Sassy.
Oh, God. So beautiful, and she's from Canada.
Yeah, and he says it wasn't as bad as the plate drop noise when Pigpen went home, but still quite a bit of sass.
Yeah.
And, oh, okay, we only have a couple more left.
Yeah, and then we're talking about Last Chance Kitchen, right?
Yeah, and how does Only Child manage to make bleeding weird and annoying? That's an excellent point. He really found a way.
Bleeding was so normal before this.
Yeah.
It was so bad, though. That bloody hand was really rough. And then there's, there's a thread on Reddit about whether or not Philip got a bad rap for constantly promoting his restaurant, since presumably the people asked him, which I don't know if that's fair to assume that everyone wanted to know about his other restaurant. But Alex says, even if the sassy editors cut a montage of you doing something together in a sassy way, you still said the things. Maybe they were slightly out of context, but there's a reason Tom knew exactly that's what was happening, and there was no supercut of other people talking about their restaurants. No, Philip, stop it. Go plate your cocktail under a blanket.
Yeah.
Do you, I mean, do you guys have time to make a supercut of Alex doing annoying things?
Or no?
If so, insert that right now.
Here it comes.
And we're back.
Comes, here it comes.
And we're back. Spoiler alert, we didn't have time to do that. So
so yes, that is...
Well, thanks for writing in, Alex and Megan.
And Alex and Megan, Alex. Yeah, we miss you guys, and we'll see you next episode, and we'll probably need to do a very brief debrief on Restaurant Wars Part 2, just so we can hear a little bit more from you guys.
Last chance, I thought there was a chance Philip could win, because maybe Jason didn't have enough time to cook those sweetbreads, but turns out he did, and Philip's fish-wrapped sweetbread baby food mess was just...
Oh, man. Oh, that plate.
It sounded so awful and looked so bad. I was actually surprised that Tom said it had potential to be a good dish.
I think maybe
he didn't have to say that, so it must have been true. But come on.
Yeah, I just instinctively didn't believe in sweetbreads and fish together as a partnership. Which is not to say that I have extensive sweetbread experience. I just knee-jerk was like, oh, this can't happen.
Yeah.
So I was also surprised that Tom had a hopeful reading of that situation.
Yeah. But onwards to the Bay Area.
Yay. Yeah. I'm very excited about that.
I'm hoping that maybe there'll be like a really interesting contribution that Philip makes as part of the peanut gallery.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right.
Yeah.
He's not gone forever, you know?
No, he's still chiming in, or chiping in if you're talking to me.
Chiping, yeah.
He's still chiping.
Chiping.
But like, does
keep on chiping.
Does Giselle really matter to us at this point, though? I don't.
Oh yeah, I've forgotten
you made that
everyone
name up,
who
right?
isn't. I mostly just live for like whatever it is Grayson bothers to say. I really.
Yeah, I do like her one-liners.
I do too.
Yeah.
And I love, and actually, you know what? My new favorite thing about this season has to be Last Chance Kitchen Tom. Because he's just so loose and breezy, and it's so fun.
Yeah, he made a lot of
really
good.
Yeah, it's definitely Weekend Dad Tom.
Yeah, Weekend Dad Tom. He has like weird like linen shorts on, and he's just, he doesn't care about anything. He's just going to fire up the grill and
yeah,
do
there's
whatever.
Definitely no shirt on.
Oh, yeah, he's in parchment paper.
Yes, that's what the cool dads are wearing these days is what I hear.
He's wearing a parchment paper shirt.
He's wearing
parchment
paper shorts. he's ready to get roasted like some delicious cheese.
Yeah. Yeah, or go fishing, either way.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Good for everything.
Yeah.
Delightful. So we've glossed over Last Chance Kitchen a smidge, and I think it's time for some predictions. What do we think, guys? What's happening next?
I think Amar's going.
We think Amar's
Yeah, I think...
Amar's
sorry,
up.
Who?
Yeah. I think Amar or Carl.
You know that that third episode, Bad Luck, is really going to get Amar, and he's going to get out.
Yeah, beginner's luck will have to run out sometime. So
are people really... I'm not worried about Carl. I guess maybe I'm the only one.
No, I'm not worried about Carl.
No,
I was going to say, I think next episode is Carl's episode. I think he's going to just shoot up.
He's going
to
shoot it up.
Yeah.
To the top.
Up to the top
that
with
could
the
be
shooting.
Good or bad.
You heard it here first.
Shooting up Carl.
Carl's rise to ascendancy. How are we feeling? I'm worried that this is going to shake Kwame's confidence. Something serious.
Mm. Since I feel like he really it's been nothing but turn. Shaking for the last couple of episodes for Kwame.
I'm worried that the age of Kwame is over.
Yeah. Mm. Yep. I agree. I think it's like, bring on Karen. Bring on Marjorie.
Yeah. I'm team Karen Marjorie for sure. I don't foresee them getting out anytime soon. Although I don't think Marjorie's done anything to make Alex more confident. Not that that is going to determine the Top Chef judges do, but
I don't know if we talked about this on the show or just to Sarah, but like I feel like Marjorie is like Bizarro Superman.
Yeah,
you know, where
she does
like
the opposite of everything that should work, and
right, so like kryptonite makes her stronger.
Well,
kind of thing.
She said that she was like, I'm gonna do everything I'm not supposed to do and win, and she did.
Yeah, she
so
nailed
far,
it.
Yeah.
I enjoy. This is not the first time that that's happened with our remaining ladies on the show, where they've been like, "Listen, we're just here to do this, and we're gonna slay," and then they do, which I really love. Yeah,
do like slaying now.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah, I say Karen, Marjorie, Carl are top three.
Whoa!
No, bold. Isaac, no swamp peoples. No?
No.
He will never get his 10,000?
I don't think so.
I can't see Swamp People taking it to the net, but I think we might lose.
Oh, I'm all aboard the fan boat for Swamp People.
Swamp People taking it to the limit? Are we, so are Sarah and I just a doubtful Karen on this Swamp Person victory tour? Is that what's happening?
No, I still think Karen and Marjorie, but I think it's going to be Karen, Marjorie, and Swamp Peoples.
Really? Yeah,
I don't think Carl gets top three. But maybe
not. Oh, and what about Jeremy?
Nope.
No, man. I'm off that Jeremy train.
Yeah. Well, okay, but as you like to give people numbers of episodes left. How many episodes does Jeremy have left?
How many episodes are left in the season?
Like five?
One. He has one.
All right. One. It's the finale next time, and he's out. Jeremy and two.
Jeremy and two. Okay. Okay. Yeah. What about Kwame? Now I just want you to give everybody a number. Give them all numbers.
Kwame's either one or three.
I think we're too tired to go with a
7.5. Okay, 7.5. You final offer, guys. Final offer.
And Ez is haggling for nothing. We've been doing great. I'm pretty sure I didn't introduce us at the beginning of this episode at all.
Y'all know us. It's episode 10. Come on.
It's episode 10. My name is Tanya. That was Chris.
Hey.
I'm Sarah.
Ezra.
Yay, we did it.
And all those noises in the background are Caleb.
Yay. Oh, Caleb's plating us up something real nice. Probably some sweetbreads, maybe a little bit of avocado nacho.
Some coffee. Mm. Yeah.
So he's just been tossing back a pouch cap across the room like five times. I think that'll like tenderize it, and then he'll just plate you up the pouch of smashed mangoes.
He put some pepper on it, actually.
Oh, yeah? He put some pepper on it? Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Nice.
All right.
I can't wait to see what he's sous vide.
He's now running across the room, closing his eyes. This is going to end in tears.
No, this is going to end in literal tears.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Thank you so much.
Gotta go be good parents.
Okay, bye.
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 Get some sleep.